and trying to understand with greater and greater intelligence and insight. So Arjuna is on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he's grief-stricken. He's about to engage in a battle. It's a civil war, and on the other side are arrayed members of his own family. By force of circumstance, he has his duty actually impels him to engage in a battle against his own family members. And so he's pitched into a state of grief. So Krishna says to him, while speaking learned words, because Arjuna is looking for an excuse to get out of this duty that he has to engage in this battle. So he's looking for precedent. He's quoting a chapter and verse why he shouldn't do this business. So Krishna says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So it wasn't so much to his arguments that I should fight or I shouldn't fight that Krishna addressed Arjuna. It was his state of being. He was falling apart. He was in a state of complete grief. Why is this? What are you mourning for? He's mourning for the fact that there is a battle about to happen, and on this battlefield so many people will die. He said, but you're mourning for what is not worthy of grief. And then he says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. There's a lot of kings on the battlefield. Nor in the future, he says, shall any of us cease to be. This is his statement to Arjuna. Here Arjuna is seeing some mass annihilation, but Krishna says, no, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes to another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. That's what's happening. At the time of death, the embodied soul, the living entity, passes to another body. But for the living entity, you or I, there's no problem. So in this way, he begins his instruction to Arjuna, saying that those who are seers of the truth, those who actually can see, they have concluded that of the non-existent, the asat, the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. So here he's giving Arjuna essential instructions in the nature of reality, which is ultimately meant at assuaging Arjuna's grief. So to understand, he says, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. But what is he mourning for? He's mourning for the perishing of different material bodies. Never was there a time when I did not exist. Nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So what is the referent, according to Krishna, of this word I, when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings? Who are the people? Well, they're not the bodies. And this is the first teaching, first knowledge, confidential knowledge. I am not this body. And actually, one who is situated in this knowledge, not merely theoretically, but practically, is actually immune from all grief. Because a person knows who he is. So according to the Vedic teachings, we are in need of this knowledge because we are all in a state called Maya. The word Maya means illusion. Sometimes the word Maya is broken down two syllables, Maya, meaning that which is not. So what we have done is become mistaken about who we are. That is to say, we've misidentified ourselves as matter or material products. Now, there's two kinds of matter, according to this analysis. There's later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will talk about what he means by matter. And he means the gross matter that you see, and also what you can't see, but is subtler, say, your mind. Mentality, mentalness, mental energy, that's another material energy. So there's gross and subtle material energy. You see, the difficult thing is in explaining what we mean when we talk about the self. The Sanskrit word is atma or jivatma, the embodied soul. Or we use the word soul. As this word soul has been, of course, tossed around by Western philosophers, metaphysicians, and other kinds of people for a long time. And it's got a lot of, we carry a lot of conceptions with us. So the certain feature of Western thinking has always been to identify the soul and the mind, same thing. Like if you look at a standard book of history of Western metaphysics, they'll talk about what they call the mind-body problem, which is interchangeable with the soul-body problem. So we get confused. So when we say, I want to make it clear that when we say, I'm not this body, that also means I'm not this mind. Because we identify ourselves very closely sometimes with our mind or what we consider to be our personality. Say, a person might think very something mental. Well, for example, I'm a Scorpio, I'm a Leo. This is another form of material identification, just as I'm black or I'm white, I'm male or female, I'm old or young. These are bodily identifications. This body I have, it may be a black body or it may be a white body, it may be a male body, it may be a female body. That's a characteristic of the body. So I'm not that. But also, I'm not my mind. That is, I'm not a Leo, not Aquarius, not a Pisces, or whatever else it's my misfortune to fall under. I'm not that either. These mental characteristics of being intelligent or stupid or being bright in certain ways, not so bright in certain ways, all this is all part of the body. It's as though we have two bodies, an inner body and an outer body, like you have, may have an undershirt on and an outer shirt. So similarly, we have the inside, the closest body to us, is this is the subtle body, his mind. And then over that's the gross body, the one that you can touch. So we're encaged in the wrapped, like a golf ball. The soul is wrapped up in these two layers, this inside layer and this outside layer. And what happens is that in the state of material conditioning, we identify ourselves with the material body. And this identification of the self with material body is very, very deep. So we think that whatever happens to the body happens to me. And for that reason, as soon as we identify ourselves with the material body, and then we begin to act on the material platform. That is, from this body is part of material nature. It's really hooked into a whole big mechanism, as we ought to know. This body is hooked into the whole workings of material nature, and we're being driven by material nature in certain ways. The environment has an impact on this body. Different things happen. And actually, I pretty much am driven by the desires that arise in my body, desires over which I have only maybe a very little bit of control. I become, word is different, is conditioned. When one falls into material nature and identifies oneself with this situation in the material world, that person is called a conditioned soul. A conditioned soul becomes conditioned by material nature. That is, I really have to act in certain pretty well-defined ways according to my particular mode of nature that I'm situated in. I become conditioned. And I'm conditioned by my past. Because what happens when the soul changes body? Automatically, we're liberated from the gross body at the time of death. That takes place. The gross body dies. And the soul, as it's described here, changes to another body. It remains the same identity, but changes to another body, but takes with it the mind or the subtle body. So when this transmigration takes place, the soul, along with the mind, enter into another gross body. This is what happens. Why is that? Because we have unfulfilled program for ourselves. All during this life, we've been writing the ticket for our next body. We have certain kinds of desires. And so we go. This is described later on in the Bhagavad Gita. Let me find it for you. Where is it? In the 9th chapter? You know? That just as the air carries aroma from one place to another. Anyway, I can't remember exactly where it is. So, what happens is we have a particular kind of mentality. And then we get a body to fit that mentality. We get the particular, according to the desires we've developed. We get the particular kind of nose, or muzzle, or snout, or proboscis, or whatever, you know, to fit how we want to live. So this is what happens when this transmigration. So, but the main thing is to understand is that we're not this, even this mind, even though it's close to us, even though we're very familiar with the ins and outs of it, it's not open for public display like most of the rest of our body. It's not us. So, but identifying with this, we then act seeking our satisfaction, seeking our happiness. We act on the basis of the body, impelled by various kinds of material desires. But this is, according to the Bhagavad Gita, this is where our problems lie. Because identifying ourselves, falsely as it turns out, with the material body, we have to suffer everything that happens to the body. Whatever happens to the body, such as here, where we're discussing the ultimate disaster that every material body, every embodied soul faces, which is death. I mean, there are no happy endings. Everybody dies. Death is still the single cause of all fatalities in the United States, in spite of so much medical science and everything. They haven't, somehow or other, this disease or that disease, but there's still death. And that's going on. So this is the ultimate challenge to our existence. We're all sitting here, and basically our really fundamental concerns have to do with perpetuating our existence, making a little room for ourselves, a little elbow room in this world, and keeping ourselves going and our little projects going, whatever happens. But we're doing this in a place where we're sure and certain to be destroyed. We don't know when this order will be fulfilled. Our ticket comes up. But that we don't know. We're always surprised when it happens, even though it happens, you know, and within 100 years, every single person in this room will predictably have encountered that moment when all our programs have ground to a stop and we fail at our basic effort, which is to survive. We've declared war on material nature. Material nature will win. So this is a bad situation for us. This is why, basically, in the material world, everyone is nervous. I was reading some New York writer said, there's either nervousness or death. You're alive, you're nervous. But actually, the cause of that nervousness and anxiety, terror, depending on how alert you are, is death. So who's going to tell us how to solve the death problem? And my proposition is that if you take any problem you have and you work it down to what's really at the base of it, you find it's the death problem. I may have mentioned this at another Sunday feast lecture. I don't know. I don't want to mean to repeat myself, but it struck me very vividly where somebody took a survey of people, what things were they afraid of the most. And astonishingly enough, not very many people said they were afraid of death. They're afraid of, say, unemployment a whole lot more. But then if you ask the person, well, why are you afraid of unemployment? Well, I won't get any money. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, if I don't get any money, I won't get any food. I won't be able to maintain my house. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, I'll die. So it's just like people prefer not to deal with the death problem, because if it's the death problem, in stark reality, they've got no way to deal with it. But if it's the unemployment problem, maybe they can, looks a little easier to handle. So that's what's really bothering us in the material world, is our real problem is the death problem, and we're kind of living a lie because we're not facing up to it. We're not really facing up to it. That I'm going to die, my wife is going to die, my beautiful little lisping toe-haired children are going to die, their children are also going to die. The whole bunch of us is just going to be wiped out. What am I going to do about it? And if I think about it long enough, it can really drive me crazy. And people say, don't think about it. It's not healthy. But actually, human life is meant for making a solution to this problem, because it's a fact, a cat or a dog can't do anything. But what Krishna is telling Arjuna here in this Bhagavad Gita is, here is the solution to the death problem. He says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all the kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. You're not mourning for what is worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. There's something more going on here. So the difficulty is that we don't know, as is said, that what the seers of the truth know, that there's two kinds of categories. There's matter and there's spirit. And matter is changing and going in and out of being all the time. Anything made out of matter, it's put together and it falls apart. Comes together, it falls apart. Three phases. It's created, it stays a little while, and it falls apart. Nature around is working that way everywhere you see. Everywhere you see, things are being created. Things last a while, and then things fall apart, and out of the constituent parts, new things are made. And this is nature. That happens to our own bodies also. They're put together, they last for a while, and they fall apart. So, but this is not, doesn't happen to this other kind of existence, that which is sat, a real. The word in Sanskrit before, that which is comes together, stays for a little while and falls apart, that's called asat. Or unreal, or unexistent. That is, it hardly is. It just is there for a little while, and then it goes. It's like a smoke. Just like a fog, you know. It's there and it's gone. So it's like not really real. But then there's this other stuff, that's sat. What of that? It always has been and never goes out of existence. That's the other side. And that we are. That I. If we actually know the reference to the word I. Not this body. Not this male, female, black, white, old, young, Scorpio, Leo, Pisces, whatever. Not that. But you, the self. The soul. So, okay, you can tell me what the soul is. Not what is it. Because we have to be able to kind of hone in on what we're talking about when I speak about the self or the soul, because it seems like you're talking about something really metaphysical, abstract, nothing you can get your teeth on, nothing you can experience. It's not, you know, a black box. It's not red, white, and green. It doesn't come with a label that tells you, know, where's the soul? How can you get a hold of this? Well, the Bhagavad Gita says that actually there's no question of not experiencing the soul. The soul is actually, it is ourselves. We are the soul. But see, here's the other idea, like because of the way people in the West have been thinking of the soul, there's been this notion that among religious people sometimes, or the way I learned in Sunday school, the idea I got was that I am my body and I have a soul. Right? You hear people say, I have a soul, or my soul. So that's what the thinking is that, so that at the time of death, I die and this soul, this kind of ghostly pancreas or thyroid gland or something, thymus probably, pineal gland, whatever it is, goes on, you know, of which, who's, you know, something like that. So I don't know what the soul is. It's just something, a little bit of not clockwork. I'm clockwork, and then there's this little bit of something ghostly kind of not clockwork. I can't get my hands on. What are they talking about? What is the soul? But here in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, no, you are the soul. That soul is yourself. So that the symptom of the soul is the symptom of our own existence. And that is consciousness. It says that the soul lights up this body, floods this body with consciousness in the same way that the sun floods everything with light. So there it is. You can't say, I don't experience soul. Because having a soul is the condition for my having any experiences at all. It what makes me somebody that says, hey, I felt good, I felt bad, I saw red, I saw yellow. This I that's undergoing all these things, that's the soul. Let's like take an example. So we have a little light here, and a light flashes on and goes green. And so by using a little cleverness, we hook up a little camera, and this camera is hooked up to a little computer, which is hooked up to a voice simulator. And so when that light flashes green, from out of this voice simulator attached to the camera comes the words, I see a green light. Now, here I'm sitting in the same room, and when it goes on, I report, I see a green light. Now, there's a difference between those two reports. Because nowhere in that little camera and computer and voice synthesizer has anyone seen a green light. There is no experience taking place. Huh? There's not an entity undergoing any experience. It's a kind of mimic of the outside processes. But here, I know that I, whatever that I is, am seeing a green light. That's the difference. I am the subject that is undergoing these experiences. Now, there's a fact that there is a class of so-called thinkers who are trying to deny this. That having come up with the clever little machine that says, I see a green light, they're trying to tell us that that's all that happens here, too. These are some people at MIT. They want us to tell us that no, we don't undergo experiences. And one wonders about those people. That's all I can say about that. Is one wonders about those people. And I guess you could probably hypnotize yourself into thinking that you are not existing, because that's what they're saying, is that you're not existing. Later on, after I finish, you can say something. This it's called behaviorism, or philosophical behaviorism. Sometimes they try to push this point of view. It's an extreme point of view. But anyway, there it is. See the self, the experiencer. That which gives off consciousness. That's us. In other words, this consciousness that is the common factor of all my experiences. Any experiences I have, what they have in common is there's this adjective I can put to it, it's my experiences. And what makes it mine is that there's a center of consciousness. So no matter how many physical and mental changes I go through, it's still my history, and I'm still the experiencer. That's me. And what about that me? Here Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist. Nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So what's going on with all these bodies coming into being and going out of being, that we're implicated in the terror of that whole thing, that actually has nothing to do with us? Because that consciousness is the symptom of a soul, that there, for that soul there is no coming into being and there's no going out of being. Is not put together by material nature, nor will ever be taken apart by material nature. That is us. So our release from the terror and suffering of material existence is brought about by learning how to culture, to engage in the cultivation of the soul, in the life of the soul. Because when we identify with our material body, because this is a, I'd like to point, this is a, To think that I am this body. See, right now I could explain to you philosophically about the difference between the body and the soul. You may now have some idea of what is meant by the soul. But we may know this theoretically. We may think it theoretically. Yes, I'm not this body. I am the soul. I may want to believe that. Yet, we don't have the realization. Because when the realization is there, if I actually have realized knowledge I am not this body, then at the time of death, I will not be disturbed. I will have full conviction, understanding, and realization that whatever is happening to my body, this is not happening to me. That is, I lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So it's one thing to begin with the theoretical understanding, another thing to bring it into practical realization. But that's what Krishna consciousness is about. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, devotional service, is the life of the soul. What does a soul do? If I'm understanding I'm not this body, and if I'm not going to act on the material platform, then what do I do? Because if you see what our problem is this identification of the self with the material body. Now, what is the cause of this identification? What perpetuates this identification? What makes it that when I leave this body, this one material body, which has caused me so much pain and suffering, then what do? I take another material body. How do I get free from this condition of taking material bodies over and over and over and over and over again? What it means is I have to also become liberated also from the mind, from the material mind. So the driving force that keeps us in material existence are material desires. Material desires are what force us to identify ourselves as material products, as material bodies. That's why you'll see in every religious tradition, everywhere, there's always some regulation, at least, of material desires, and there's always at least one group of people who try to...